Hello and welcome to the DTFF podcast. My name is Scott. I'm with two fire guys.
I got Todd.
Hello.
And I got Ash.
Oh, hey there.
And I'm back, and we're all back. You guys were on last week. I haven't seen it yet, but everybody kind of gets the gist of what we're doing. Ash is now the chief. No, sorry, deputy chief. Just promoted him. I'm deputy chief along with Rob, and Todd and I are still lowly captains. But tonight I think we're going to talk about some training as we're going to start doing more of. We're going to talk about a scenario we just went through last week and how to plan that and how that all kind of went and what the reasons were around it and lessons learned and buzzwords. Go ahead, Ash.
Thanks for the gracious intro there. So Grant, who's been on this podcast before, he's the reason that we have a explicit lyric. He was working with me for the scenario, and it's kind of the end of the season. We may get another live burn, maybe, but we thought, hey, while the weather is still favorable before we really shift into wildfire prep, let's kind of send off the burn season with a bang. We've been doing a lot of safety officer-oriented training. We've got some, at the time, some potential new leadership members that were stepping up. So we really wanted to try to kind of tick a lot of boxes in one scenario. So we went back and forth, and all right, like, how much can you really throw at him with one burn building? Like, well, all right, if we use the upper burn building, we can do this or that or this or that. There's upper level, bottom level. All right, we can have a fire here. All right, now if we use the other lower burn building, all right, maybe we can have a fire and we can have a patient trapped. And all right, well, what if we use the building that Kevin used for seminar? Fuck it, let's light everything up. So that's what we kind of landed on. And we ended up paging out the team to the training grounds. And we stated we weren't trying to pull the wool over and like, oh, it's a nice residential neighborhood. Nope. I came in as somebody looking across from their residence at our training facility, saying that they can see some smoke coming. They've seen lights in the area for the past couple nights, but no like fire truck lights, just like weird headlamps or whatever. And now they see smoke. So they basically, kids are in there messing around. There's somebody's in there messing around. So Rob was the duty officer. So he was going direct. I was being dispatched. I'm like, yeah, you're looking for a full page or you want to go check this out? He's like, nope, let's go with a full page. I'm like, perfect. So Rob went over there. And when Rob got on scene, I gave him the rundown. I said, okay, man, this is what you see. You are at the training grounds. Everything is live. Because usually we'll say, okay, you can't use this one hydrant. You can't use this door. I'm like, everything is live as you see it. As you were pulling in, you saw there was two kids that were running out of here. And they're like, yeah, I don't know, like my buddy, there was like five of us. And I mean, sorry, man, like, And then they get scattered and they went and ran off into the orchard. So he's thinking, okay, I've got some patients. I've got multiple buildings on fire. He actually didn't notice the third building was on fire. He saw two of them right away. And then the smoke started to billow out of a third one as he was doing his kind of scene size up. So that's what they initially arrived to. He ended up bringing, he brought our in-house safety officer. He looks after all of our like in-house like health and safety stuff. And he's trained up for a safety officer in the field as well. But we obviously can't be reliant on one guy. So we've all taken that role. But he was here and he was active, so he showed up, and they were kind of that one combined team. So they start walking around. They do their 360 as best as they could. they're checking vehicles, looking for patients. They're, you know, looking for hazards. Did a really nice job there. And then once they kind of got a bit of a lay of the land, they pulled themselves back to the officer truck and started to set up shop. And all the apparatus started to roll in, and they had to divert one truck down to the bottom. Second truck was able to look after two of the buildings. He got them to stretch hose lines. We did hide two patients on them. So out of the three buildings, there was two patients. And we didn't give any extra clues that there was potential patients missing. We did say that there was like five of them running around. Two of them, they met when they were arriving. And then we ended up giving some more clues as the scenario started to evolve. But that's kind of how we built it. And we can dive into more, but Todd's got a question.
Question with the water supply. So did you guys just have the one truck initially take the hydrant, and the other one was independent and needed tenders, or did both tie off of hydrants, or what? Because I'm trying to remember, there's just one hydrant or two?
No, we have two hydrants. We actually just plumbed in our second, which is live now. So engine one tied into the new hydrant, laid into that. So they were dialed up for water. The second engine, as it was arriving, our first hydrant's like kind of a pain in the ass distance away. And Rob had him pull straight up. And we had to keep people busy. So he ended up getting water tender with a couple guys on it, just to keep people active in our scenario. And like, because it's the training grounds, because they're sea cans, like, you're not trying to pretend like you need all this water. They know what they have for fire. It's going to be a pallet fire. We weren't trying to say like, all right, this is a two-story structure and I'm going to need all this extra water supply. No, you have what you have. This is a bunch of shit rats burning in our training facility, which we have had before. We have been toned out to our training grounds for, we were doing an AutoX course, and there was a row of like 12 cars, and they lit the entire fucking row on fire. And we got toned down there to go and put out all of our training cars. So it's not out of the ordinary for something like this to happen.
And people have squat in burn cans and burn buildings in the past. Well, that's happened at seminar for like real life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, so this is, I mean, hopefully we don't have too many squatters, but all this is very, very real, realistic stuff. It's still kind of chilly at nighttime, as you can see. Todd and myself a little bit less. I mean, we're all looking a little bit healthy with the sun.
Very sunny.
Todd got all of a sudden. Jesus. When he walked in, he had the old raccoon eyes, pretty heavy.
I think he still has them, actually. Mm-hmm. Pretty prevalent.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to see. So the second truck did get some water tender support. And they were stretching multiple lines to look after two different buildings. And we had a team that set up RIT, because even though we were going into our own burn buildings, I mean, we don't know what these guys were up to in them. I mean, they could have all tons, you know, all sorts of shit in there. We only burn pallets, but if they're shit rats and they're doing whatever they have to do, they could have fuel in there, they could have whatever in there. So you don't know. And if you're going into an unknown environment, you want to have RIT set up 100%. So yeah, the guys did really, really well. They kind of hit every box that you were hopeful that they would hit. There's obviously hiccups along the way, but the idea was to separate the scene, make it big, so it was too much for the IC to handle. You would need to really start to rely upon your officers that were in the jump seat. You have to rely upon your safety officer to be that angel on your shoulder and like look after a lot of, you know, the extra things that when you're trying to manage a scene, you can't do alone.
So with the lower burn buildings, they're a little bit of a distance away. So did you guys end up breaking into like two separate scenes, like with a second IC for that lower section, or did the one IC kind of oversee and then you just tasked your officers into groups or divisions, or how did you guys manage that?
Yeah, so for the lower burn building, because it is a decent amount of separation, it rolled up with six on the truck, and he had some pretty experienced guys on it. So he ended up leaving that to Adam as the truck officer to oversee everything on the bottom side. So Rob stayed up on the top side and kept himself pretty close to the command truck. He let Adam look after the bottom side. Adam was giving updates back to command. And he had a team lead, I would say, that was looking after the attack. So Adam stayed a little bit detached, probably not as much as in hindsight, if he was going to be overseeing the entire scenario on the bottom side, he should have been. But I mean, these were just some things that we debriefed on the backside of the call. Yeah, there was just a couple of small things, but that's the purpose of why we built the scenario the way we did, because it was such a realistically a very simple large scale event. So to kind of get the brain thinking, okay, if we're going to be that spread out, I, as I see, can't really look after the entire thing. I'm going to support you as I see, but I need the proper people in the proper spot. So I think Adam got himself involved when they first got there, but then as the scenario evolved, he began to detach and look after it from the outside of the structure.
I think it's almost like a wildfire event. Only it was structure fires.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, structure fire normally is, like, a box on fire. And it's fairly easy because, you know, unless it's, like, a mall on fire or a massive warehouse, you know, you don't really get separated much in a structure fire. You kind of see everybody, and the IC can usually handle everything, and the safety officers there, of course, and captains. But, yeah, the way you had it spread out was good because, yeah, it forced them to do that kind of that decentralized command. And it forced, I don't want to say forced because the captains are pretty good. They'll step up.
Yeah.
But it made the captains have to, you know, take it maybe a different leadership role than they're used than they thought they would be doing, because it's no longer just one structure fire; it's three. Yeah. So, yeah, it almost is like Todd said. They're like little mini incident commands, and then the main incident commands. So that was good.
I think you nailed it, Scott. Like it's like coming into forestry season, you know, like especially doing structure protection. Like we've got the overall commander's intent from IC and everything. Doing multiple areas, and then you break into like that team is going to be, you could have separated and made a division or whatever, but you don't necessarily don't need that separation either, as long as there's a team lead down there relaying that other information back up, kind of like a 2IC role, if you will. But there's definitely a lot of moving parts because you'll need RIT for multiple things and overall communications and water supply. Yeah, you're still searching for potential other people trapped in the, or not trapped, but potentially in the buildings and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, one thing I liked was the fact that you guys just played it like as it was. Because like you said, a lot of times with these, we want a certain outcome. So we, you know, that stairwell isn't usable because it's like we don't want to use the outside stairwell because we want to gain access from the inside. We, you know, we have power lines down over here. We have this, we have that. But yeah, in this case, it sounded like just as they saw it, dealt with it. So yeah, that's good. Because otherwise, it's hard to play act, I guess, the scenario.
Yeah, the other really cool thing. So when Grant and I went down and we did a walkthrough, we remembered from our previous scenario, we had the stairwell was just covered in shit. We had pallets and drums there because we wanted it to be an impassable object prior to simulate a structure collapse. So we go down there. I'm like, ah, son of a bitch, we still have all this shit in here. I'm like, let's just leave it. Like, they will likely think it's, you know, not going to be there again. And then they make a push in, and now all the stuff's in the way. So what's funny, the guys know that we're assholes when we build out these scenarios. And like, when I say assholes, like, they know we're trying to make them think. Like, not trick them, that's not the word, but we're trying to make them think. So they're always wondering, like, what's the curveball or, like, what's the anomaly that we're trying to think a little outside of the box, but still something that you could potentially anticipate on a real scene. So we're calling that there was five people that were there. Two of them ran off kind of halfway through their search. I said, hey, we got an update from BCEHS. One of their cars picked up a heavily burnt patient on the south side of our area. So they have to be coming back from a different call, and they see this guy staggering, and they picked him up on the side of the road, heavily burnt, and he's saying, like, I'm missing my three friends, or, no, I'm missing my four friends. So, okay, he's one. They saw two of them. Okay, now there's still two unaccounted patients, right? So Rob picks up on that, and he walks over to me. He's like, hey, so I'm counting two, right? I'm like, I mean, if I was doing math, that's not a bad number to land on, right? So in his mind, he's thinking, I got to find two people. And Adam's crew on the bottom found theirs too sweet. Like, they went in, they made a push, they called the left-hand search, got to a door, breached the door, so we got to fix that. like, on the inside of the structure, yeah, which is fine. It says, it wasn't hard to breach, so they're doing a quick primary, and now he's in there popping the door, because it popped really easily, and on the debrief, we're like, primary search, if you find the locked door, most times you leave it locked. He's like, but it popped so easy. We're like, well, yeah, obviously, it's like one little screw that's holding it shut for the purpose of seminar or whatever it was, right? And he's like, oh, yeah, no, I know. But that was a bit of a, you know, talking learning point. But they went in, they searched, they grabbed the patient right away. And then Rob's like, okay, perfect. And like one thing that like I quote got Rob on to make him think more is once they handed the patient over, I'm like, hey, perfect. Patient is with BCEHS. And he's like, yeah, he gives the update to dispatch. And then dispatch says, okay, copy. Patient is leaving with BCEHS. And now they continue to search for the next patient. And there's no car arriving back. So we now no longer have BCHS on scene. So I gave him a couple of the breadcrumbs along the way. And I didn't want him to be like, okay, now we have a patient outside with no EHS here. So as they were getting closer to finding the second patient, I was like, command from dispatch. Yeah, go ahead. I'm like, we have EHS clearing from the hospital. Would you like them back? And he's like, yes, please. We are still potentially searching for a second patient, and we wouldn't mind them here for rehab. So he made the right choices along the way, which is really good. But the funny thing is, and I mean, this is going to happen, the second patient was in the building that they searched first, and because it's a CCAN, they made a push in, they knocked back the fire, they did their primary, and they knocked it down, but then they're like, hey, like, let's go deal with a bigger threat. There was like zero threat. So they pulled back out and they didn't fully extinguish the fire because again, it's a CCAN and they're looking for life. But we had the patient sitting on top of a barrel, and when the door opened, it blocked the patient. So they actually pushed in, they searched, they did the quick feel around on the floor, missed the patient, and they are searching this shit out of the upper burn building. Rob's got crews going, like, doing a perimeter, they got a thermal camera in the field, and I'm like, man, I'm not going to tell you where the guy is, but you have had people inches from them. And he's like, okay, like, man, like, where the hell would they be? And so they kept searching. I'm like, almost right away you had people. Also, I'll tell you, you still have fire in that burn building. I would probably go back to that burn building. He's like, okay. So they made the push back in. Because, I mean, like, you don't want to see guys suffer. He was being crazy thorough. And, like, it was a bit of a cheeky spot. But, yeah, the team pushed back in. They started to attack the fire. And they found the second patient once they went back in. So, all in all, it was really, really good. The guys, I find, are doing a really good job on the debrief now, like, where people are being critical of their own actions. Like, we don't need to say much anymore. Like, guys would be like, oh, yeah, like, I know I missed this. I should have done this. Like, where they might miss it in the action, on the after-action debrief, they're realizing it. So I think, like those learning moments are really, really important.
Yeah, the which thing that we do, whether we're doing that as we call it now, but it's kind of ingrained now. So, you know, you give two good things that someone did, then you give yourself And I'm like, I should have did this. Rather than pointing fingers at people, you take your ownership of what you did wrong, and then usually throw some kudos at you what everybody else did right. But and I think that's kind of going around now.
Yes.
It sounds like it's starting to kind of take hold a little bit.
Yeah, I think just going back, it's hard when we're, like you said, simulating these training events, especially when CCAN, and you tell everybody, hey, it's our CCANs. We're not doing anything crazy because we get so used to how we train in them. So it's easy to get focused on different tasks, how they kind of did. Whereas if you would have said, hey, this is a house, you know, they would have gone in there. They would have done, you know, searched up and down and around, probably a lot more thorough. But because they're so minded that it's just our CCAN, that's how you can do those easy slips. But it's super good hearing that everybody is in that post debrief is self accountable for those actions, because that's the best way we learn. Like, and having that environment to step up and say, "Hey, I made a mistake. I could have done this better." is huge. It just puts so much self accountability with all the members, and the whole team is going to grow substantially from it. And actually, I just want to go back to the ambulance thing. That was a real good challenge that you threw out there as well. And it's one thing that I would say to anybody working with their local paramedics is, you know, really have these conversations. We have a lot of new staff going into a lot of these small communities now. They have that information and communication saying, hey, like, this is a unified command. And as paramedics, they need to be thinking of, okay, like, we are unified. I'm the incident commander now for the ambulance. What do we got for resources, patients? You know, start communicating that back to bring more cars in. Dispatch does a really good job of that. As they get information, our ambulance dispatch will start shuttling new resources as well. But we need to take some accountability as the paramedics on scene there as well. Not even if you have a patient right away, you're still that IC. And you still need to relay that information out. And sometimes that gets missed. And then we get ourselves into these situations in live events where, okay, we just lost our ambulance because they're transporting somebody critical now, and we still need two more.
Right.
So, yeah, that early recognition of, hey, this is how many ambulances I need, and hopefully you get them back. It needs to be communicated out. And especially our small areas, which we've talked about before, you may not be getting that second or third ambulance for quite some time, depending on resources. So make those calls early, just like mutual aid. Make those mutual aid calls early.
You know, that's actually one thing that Rob did. And he's like, you know what? Like, just because this is at our training grounds, we had, like, everybody was working and we had no extra people. And he's like, man, I can really use another set of hands. What if we get something? So even in the sim, knowing it was our training facility, he still said, can I get the old mutual aid coming? So, like, obviously he didn't want it for the scenario, but just to get that in your mind, that's a box I would like to check as I'm dropping down my list. Like, he looked around, he knew that Scott had a crew out, our rookies were out doing work, so he had what he had. And if there was a call, like another call, if that was a real call, like, we had nobody that we could really, you know, flake away. So let's make that call early and let's ask for some extra help coming, even if it's just for standby, which I think we're trying to get away from standby. Like, get them on scene and send our guys back for standby. Like, they've already been out there working. Let's get the guys that have blown through a tank or two, let's get them back, and they can stay on scene, but let's just get them, you know, doff off their gear. Let's make sure that the truck's full of air, the hose is wrapped, and then bring in those fresh crew to go out there and work. So it was sweet to see that he was thinking about that. And I will give props to the guys. When they pulled the patient out of the second building, they got out to a safe working area, got their gear peeled back off, started to do an assessment. One of the guys came ripping over asking for all of our med gear, which I'm like, no, like, don't pilfer this off of the bush truck. Like, this is just a dummy and we're training. But talk through it. Like, we had Matt there, so he was kind of oversight. So they did a brief amount of work kind of away by the building, but nowhere near where the ambulance crew would it ever end up being. So they did come over, they grabbed the clam, got the patient loaded up on the clamshell, and then walked him over to where the ambulance would be, and then gave a bit of a handoff. And, just knowing that, let's get him out of the hot zone. Let's do an assessment. Let's see what we have to do. Are they breathing? Do we have to breathe? You know, like, what do we need to do? And then let's move them over towards the ambulance as quick as possible. That worked out really, really well.
Yeah, that whole when mutual aid comes, I unless we're like really on the edge of our fire district, I hate that standby the whole thing, because no one wants to come and stand by at all. Like, I don't want to stand by my own. Why would we ask someone else to come do it? So yeah, I'm a big fan of just having to come to the scene, unless it's like, you know, when we had the big fire. We're pretty deep into the woods there, and we needed a second. Like, we had, you know, Todd come and help us with his crew, but then we had another crew come and assist us at our hall. That's about the only time I really want people to come stand by at our hall. So yeah. Yeah, so I guess wrapping up the scenario, so kind of some pointers for people that want to run big scenarios. We do them, what, monthly? We try to do a scenario monthly. Some are big, some are smaller, you know. But I think the biggest thing is I think we've said this before, don't get mad when the guys aren't doing what you thought they're going to do, because your plan is going to fall apart. If you want to have them exactly do what you want them to do, don't rely on it, because you shouldn't ever want them to do that. You should have a loose idea what you want to see, but you really shouldn't be guiding them so much that they'll just follow what you're doing, because then that's just training. You want to see how they react under the pressure. So, you know, you kind of throw the scenario out there. They may follow what you want them to do, or it may show you something totally different. And I think that's important to know, because, you know, I've talked to the other training officers. They get frustrated because, well, the scenario didn't go as I had it planned. I'm like, well, what was your plan? Well, I wanted this to happen, and then I wanted that to happen, and then I wanted it. Like, it's not a movie script. Like, you're not writing a script. You're writing, like, you're doing a scenario where, and anything can happen, literally. So,
but have your objectives, right, through the scenario, and how they achieve those objectives. You know, you're hoping, if it's an order you want them to be achieved, you're hoping that order is going to be established. But there's, like, anything in the fire service, the tool in the toolbox, it's how are you going to get that one objective done? Was it done correctly, safely? Could have been done differently? Yes. But was it wrong? No. As long as you're achieving them safely and in a timely manner, like you said, like, that's what we're looking for. But I mean, I do that as well. As I'll get focused in on an event. It's like, oh, I didn't want them to throw the ladder there. I wanted it to be on this side, and, you know, have my plan, you know, but it doesn't work out that way. But when you step back and think about the bigger picture, everything checks the boxes and they get her done. So it's a good point.
Okay, I think we can wrap up. Shout outs. Ash, Modus.
Yeah, Modus, claim to fame, like we always say, is their snagger tool. But they've also got a ton of other stuff. Force entry gear, passive entry, they've got their textiles, we're using their one bag is a hydrant kit. You guys are using it for your high rise kit.
Our Auto X as well. We've got some of their bags with our Rescue 42 equipment as well. They're a perfect bag for all of our chains and adapters. So
yeah, they got their X gloves. Todd's rocking the radio pouch and strap, version 2.0. We've been rocking 1.0 for the best bit. So a couple changes and upgrades. I think they're pretty damn close to releasing it, so that's exciting. Yeah, so check them out on their socials. If you like what you see there, DTFF5 gets a 5% off.
Todd, stop the bleed.
Stop the bleeding. Very important. Three major methods of massive hemorrhage control: tourniquet application, direct pressure, and wound packing. Make sure you have a good tourniquet, not one off a wish, and make sure it is out of the plastic wrapper. I don't know how many times we got our ambulance back from deep clean and the tourniquets are back in the plastic wrapper. It drives me nuts. I rip them out right away. Make sure they're accessible. Have one on you. We talk about in our bunker gear as well, forestry season coming up. I have one on my chest rig. You just make sure they're there. Go to stopthebleed.com or .org to find out if there's any courses near you, if you want to become an instructor, and you can check out our YouTubes as well. We've got some video content on that, and how to make some wound packing devices and do all the course content.
Ash, Wolf Tree Coffee.
Yep, Wolf Tree Coffee, out of all over British Columbia. They ship anywhere with a minimum order. We are quite partial to the initial attack blend. They have multiple blends that are available, but we really like the initial attack because we came up with it. They sat down with us when we did seminar, came up with a nice medium dark roast. It's amazing. Support the hell out of them. They're a small town, two-person business, and they're supporting the emergency services, and with the initial attack blend, $2 from every pound sold is donated to the Honor House Society and the Honor Ranch. So that's a cause that we definitely back. So check them out on their socials. Order up a pound or two. Have it shipped out if you're not in the area.
And Todd, Tanner Olson Band.
Tanner Olson Band, West Coast Canada, I guess more so now Nashville. They've been down there for a while. So yeah, check them out on all the listening platforms as well. They're fantastic. We've had them up here. They played for the seminar. Put on one hell of a show. They're a really great band. Scott, have you heard? Are they up to anything new down there? They're making some new, quite a few new songs down in Nashville.
Yeah, there's a countdown for something happening. Not entirely sure what it is, but something's happening. I think I'm going to see them in Nashville in June or something. So hopefully by then the countdown will be over and whatever's happening is going to happen.
Yeah, they got a new song that came out in January. Call It Fate. January 19th, 2024. Actually, I haven't heard it yet. Huh. It's a collaboration with MC40. Sounds like gangster rap. What was that? E40? I don't know. I'm showing my age.
Yeah, that's what's showing your age.
You're thinking of the old E 40 pounder, maybe.
No, I'm pretty sure Tupac rapped with the guy. E40. No? West Coast? No.
Just give the fox a ball.
Scott is so white. He's talking about gangster rap and he's chucking
up. Live along and prosper. I think don't do the other thing.
I think that's the opposite of what gangster rap wants. They do not want people to live long.
Ash threw out the shocker symbol the last podcast, so
what was that for? Was that East Side?
I was trying to say East Side for my hall on the East Side of town.
Well, that's the E.
Is it?
If it's not connected, it is, but. So clearly we still go off the rails.
So, anyways, what are we at? Us. You can find us here on this platform and some other ones. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we are on TikTok. Are we on X? Twitter? Twitter X?
No.
So Jock was calling it now Twitter X. Sounds cool. we're not in there. No.
Nope. I mean, we could be if people want us to be, but we have somebody that manages that, so we could just ask to be on there. But I don't know. Does anybody use Twitter X?
I don't know what the fuck that is.
Well, it's Twitter.
Twitter. But they changed it to X.
Twitter, but.
But they changed it to X.
Yeah, it's so Twitter X.
Meh.
Anyways, you can find us on those platforms. You obviously found us in this one. Check us out on YouTube. We have videos on there. Give us a like and a follow and a share and a thumbs up and a subscribe and a bunch of other things. Yeah, anyways, any more for any more, fellas?
Shirts. Go on to our Facebook site for the link for our shirts, dtfstore.com, I believe it is.
That's not even close.
No?
But there is a link pinned on our Facebook page. Like for the past year, Todd's been throwing out this dtffstore.com/gov, and like it's nowhere on there. I think it's an email.
Yeah, email us. We'll send you a shirt. We'll sell you a shirt. Anyways, if you want our moose shirt, they're awesome moose shirts. There's a lot of traction with them. We think they're pretty cool. So, and then also we're working on some hats as well and stuff coming up. So stay tuned.
Perfect. All right. Good night. Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Yeah. Very good.
Have a good night.
Stay safe. Stay DTFF. Good night.